Your boundaries are your standards for how you would like to be treated in your relationships. You can think of them like a gate that allows other people's needs in or out. Whether those are needs of love, attention and support, or completing tasks like cooking, helping with work, or even seeing family members, needs are a very diverse set of tasks. If you have weak or porous boundaries, this means you will quickly find yourself prioritizing other people's needs over your own, and this can lead you to feeling like a soulless and empty personal butler with no love left for yourself. However, boundaries that are too rigid will leave you inflexible and impractical as a person to be with. Rigid boundaries can give the impression that you selfishly don't seem to care about other people's needs at all. Besides people, a country has boundaries, as we all know. Weak boundaries can be taken advantage of. The British media in the UK told voters before Brexit that our weak boundaries were our biggest problem. As a reaction, for some reason, the British public ended up voting for Brexit and it happened. So Britain started stamping down on its boundaries and cutting itself off from Europe. And now it has the opposite problem that its boundaries are too harsh and nobody likes Britain. And, well, it's the same for your relationships. When your boundaries are too rigid, it's like walking around with a big FU sign at everyone and you get no friends. Actually, your role assisting others with their needs is reciprocal. You also have needs yourself. So your boundaries need to reasonably accommodate for allowances in a healthy way, so you can have needs met by others whilst helping them with theirs. And thus begins the complex task of creating healthy boundaries. Since Brexit, Britain has been through 5 prime ministers due to trying to meddle with their boundaries, so it's not easy and it's wise to act with care. Today's episode will be a masterclass on setting healthy boundaries to create a better relationship with yourself and with others. Hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Webster Harris, diving into the psychology of self-improvement and today's masterclass on one of the most important and difficult topics in relationships, and that is boundaries. In the last episode on attachment, we had a concept that once you develop a mental model for it, it's hard to not see it. And it's the same with boundaries. You will notice them absolutely everywhere. Before we start thinking about relationships as such, I think we can examine a seemingly simpler example of boundaries and witness how it quickly sprouts legs and morphs into an unruly monster. Let's just imagine that you want to crush some work. Perhaps you have a brilliant idea for an episode script to write a psychology podcast. Completely arbitrary example here. I don't know where I got that idea from. Now, a great boundary that you could create for yourself is to turn your phone onto airplane mode. Just for a few hours, ignore the needs of everybody else in the world so that you can actually do your work in peace. Maybe you get a matcha latte, nestle into the corner of a library with Nora Jones on your headphones whilst your fingertips blaze with glory, transcribing the incredible ideas in your head that will surely change the lives of millions. Well, the plan is perfect, but instead of doing it, you seem to just repeatedly check your email or Slack and WhatsApp messages and sometimes find yourself on social media when we're supposed to be working. This is completely opening up our boundaries to allow all the external needs of others and their incessant requests for your attention, and it completely disrupts your ability to be in any way a genius. However, this tragic and decidedly beige work strategy is also satisfying some of your own needs at the same time. One pesky need that you have is to feel connected to others. Another one is to avoid the difficulty of doing big, hard work tasks and avoid things like awkward decisions. And so logging into email or social media allows us to instantly access some simpler problems to solve. And it's nice to be making some progress rather than getting stuck on a really big task where we seem to be going nowhere. This gives us a satisfying release where we feel some momentary feel-good productivity ticking off these little notifications instead of wrestling with our big task. And so we've already found that it's not as easy as simply setting one boundary against the world, allowing us to breeze through our work. It's also setting a series of boundaries against our own conflicting needs inside. And I think that's a really useful example for the fact that setting boundaries in relationships and with others is more confusing than just identifying one bad thing and saying that you don't allow that bad thing anymore. If I tell my partner never to talk to me after 11 p.m. because I need my beauty sleep, which I do, if I tell her that, it doesn't satisfy my other needs like letting her know that I love her if she's worried about something. And, you know, it's quite important for me to be there for her rather than telling her to take a hike because she's only allowed to have problems in between 7 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. on a Tuesday because that's what's convenient for me. Now, as I said at the start, we do not exist in isolation where we only need to think about our singular present need. We are actually in a constant trade for needs with others and with ourselves. Our minds are like a giant melting pot full of these needs bubbling below the surface, striving to get out and be met by someone else or something else. You know, love me, interest me, help me, touch me, feed me, but don't be too incessant about it. Give me some space, but not too much space. Tease me sometimes, but like only sometimes. And don't tease me when I'm hungry or when I'm tired. And don't tease me in front of my friends, unless it's clearly like flirty teasing that shows how close we are. But still don't tease me in front of Ben because he fancies you and he owes me a tenner and I want it back. And are you even listening to me? You have to listen to me. And so on and so forth. You get the point. It's not just a jungle out there. It's a tumultuous universe of mess in our own brains. And all those humans that we interact with have a similarly chaotic, fleshy bag of confused and unresolved, needy human problems going on. So now that I've outlined why it's quite hard to set boundaries properly, I'll give a quick list of 10 behaviors that you might recognize some of them in yourself that usually indicate if you have some issues with boundaries. Number one, difficulty making decisions. This can occur when people spend so much time prioritizing others that they lose touch with their own preferences, leading to indecision. It can also stem from fear of making the wrong choice or displeasing others, or feeling like we don't know how to make a choice that will satisfy them and that whatever we do will be wrong. Number two, feeling selfish for saying no. Individuals might equate setting boundaries with selfishness. This could lead to guilt when they attempt to assert their needs. This misconception prevents them from maintaining a healthy balance with their own needs and those of others. Number three, frequent apologizing. We can develop a tendency to just apologize excessively for everything, even for things that aren't even our own responsibility. And it basically indicates a discomfort with occupying space and a difficulty asserting oneself. It's often tied to like a desire to avoid conflict and just ensure others are comfortable whilst actually reducing your own comfort. And you certainly see it with quite a lot of people actually. Number four, uncertainty about what to share. If you struggle with boundaries, this can lead to oversharing or being overly guarded. This could be possessions and it could be thoughts and ideas or feelings. Healthy boundaries means sharing appropriately and building trust gradually, not letting others take advantage of us, whilst also not being too guarded. Number five, passive aggressiveness. This behavior is actually quite interesting. It indicates an inability to express needs and desires or our disappointments directly, and it often arises from a fear of conflict or a belief that our needs aren't actually important enough to state directly. So instead of confidently stating what our needs are, we can become disappointed that they're being ignored and then start to subtly try to make people feel bad without trying to get into a direct argument, but undercutting them and just saying sort of mean things that are really unhelpful. Number six, losing sense of self. When individuals prioritize others to the extent that they start to absorb their moods, their desires, or their identities, they can struggle to recognize their own needs or even maintain a separate identity. And this sounds a bit crazy, but it can genuinely happen. Number 7, need for external validation. A constant need for affirmation or fear of rejection from others can drive people to completely ignore their own boundaries whilst seeking approval by accommodating others at their own expense. Number 8, resentment. Frequent feelings of resentment may signal that an individual is overextending themselves or failing to assert their boundaries. When this happens, it often leads to anger towards those who do or do not respect their unspoken limits. Number 9, constant sense of fatigue. Feeling perpetually tired from putting others' needs first without attending to our own personal well-being is a very clear sign of boundary issues. This exhaustion can be emotional or physical because we're just running around looking after others and we have nothing left for ourselves. Number 10, dramatic relationships. If you have difficulty with boundaries, it can result in relationships characterized by volatility, drama, and things being one-sided. It leads to resentment starting to build up until it explodes and then damages the relationship. Okay, so that's a pretty interesting list. And I think most of us can relate to a few of them, and perhaps some people with more major boundary problems could relate to most of them all at the same time. In abusive situations, we can find that we'll feel completely unable to please another person and be second-guessing ourselves constantly, and feel that our needs have been long forgotten in an endless quest to somehow please this person. The sad reality is that whatever we do is going to be displeasing or result in us being made to feel shameful and unworthy. This is a toxic situation where our boundaries are being constantly violated, and of course I have no respect for people who abuse others this way, but I will also say that often we could prevent that or at least be in control of getting ourselves out of the situation by using better boundaries. Like, I have certainly ended up in a few situations that were kind of abusive when I was younger. When I was 18, I found a guy on the internet. So begins all good stories. He needed someone to help him sail his boat across the Caribbean. And so I, being a young 18-year-old wanting to sail boats across the Caribbean and do surfing, got a one-way airplane ticket to go and join him and live on a boat alone with some guy I had never met. He actually could be pretty funny, and we broed out surfing and making protein pancakes, going to bars and chasing women and stuff, and he was a cool surfer dude that I looked up to who was living the dream. Yet, over time, he would increasingly make me feel terrible about everything that I did. It started with little things, but then grew and grew, and it felt like I was just a terrible human being who was bad at literally everything. I even A-B tested some of my actions just to prove to myself that ultimately he was actually just being angry and horrible, and that it didn't really have anything to do with me or what I'd just done. And he also started to take advantage of me in terms of making me pay for more and more things on the boat. And it just got a bit ridiculous whilst he was also trying to make me feel crap about everything at the same time, and was a completely horrible situation to be in. Ultimately, it got so bad that I just ran away. Whilst he was away for a few days, I grabbed my stuff, I grabbed his battered old surfboard that he'd made me pay $500 for, and was clearly not worth $500, and I hitchhiked across the British Virgin Isles and found another boat that would take me somewhere. It actually ended up being the start of a really amazing few months sailing around the Caribbean, living my best life, and totally shaped me as a person. So it did have a happy ending. But the point is that I could have actually done something about it earlier. I've met people just like him since and not let them control me. If I'd been more sure of myself, less impressionable, better at communicating my boundaries, and sticking to them, I genuinely think I could have navigated his mood, his demands better, and had a nice time. So, if you are being made to feel crap the whole time in a relationship, I'm not saying it's your fault, and absolutely if someone is abusing you, they are the one who should be looking in the mirror for the wrongs that they are doing. But you do have the capacity to leave, and you do have the capacity to be more controlling of your situation than you think. The answer, of course, lies in healthy boundaries. But firstly, I have something to say about Magic Mind. You may or may not be aware that nature blessed me with the attention span of a cucumber and the curiosity of a kitten. But armed with a biology degree and an avid fascination on the scientific nature of managing my energy and concentration without relying on caffeine or ADHD drugs, I've learned the sorts of things that work for me. I avoid too much coffee and instead incorporate things like matcha tea and L-theanine into my day, along with nootropic superfoods like ashwagandha, bacopa, turmeric, lion's mane. However, the financial and time cost of managing supplies of all these things does start to build up, and that's where Magic Mind saves the day. It's a simple daily shot that genuinely has everything the science and my body says works. It helps you manage your mood and concentration, sleep better, less energy crashes, less stress, less anxiety, and I really can't recommend it enough to anyone interested in their health and their performance. You can get 56% off at magicmind.com/growthms and use my code growthms20 at checkout. They offer a 100% money-back guarantee if you don't feel the benefits, so nothing to lose. It's magicmind.com/growthms to invest in your brain and 56% off using growthms20 code at checkout. Details in the description. I am delighted to recommend my sponsor, Cozy Earth, whose bedding and loungewear I genuinely love. It's made from high-quality viscose from bamboo, and it gets softer with every wash. It was voted as Oprah's favorite things several years in a row, and it's because their bed sheets are so damn incredible. Their collection also includes some divine loungewear for your home or travel. They have cute little tote bags to carry your gear anywhere, so whether you are exploring through a journey of personal growth or discovering new parts of the world, you can nestle up under starry skies with the softness of Cozy Earth's loungewear. So pack your bags, venture on and visit cozyearth.com today and use code GROWTH at checkout for an exclusive 35% off. And let Cozy Earth be your travel companion on the road to adventurous growth. cozyearth.com and use code GROWTH at checkout. So back to boundaries and the solution of creating healthy boundaries. But first, we need to be able to identify the types of crap boundaries that we make and how and why we make them. The first type of useless boundary that we are prone to is a weak boundary. This is often referred to as a porous boundary, but you can refer to it as a floppy boundary that is existentially questioning the point of its own existence. If a boundary was a movie scene, it would probably be Bilbo Baggins letting the series of dwarfs into his home, dwarfs that he doesn't know and seem to take over his house without being invited. They treat it terribly, throwing food everywhere, eating all of his cheese, drinking all of his beer, and then somehow they get him to agree to work for them as a burglar, mainly because they say they don't think he would be a good burglar. And what's ridiculous about this is that Bilbo never even wanted to be a burglar anyway, or to prove to anyone how good he was at burgling, until they arrived and obnoxiously made a mess of his house. All they've done was treat him badly, and yet he's now trying to prove things to them that he didn't want to prove or didn't need to prove to anyone, and he's doing it to please people he doesn't even like. Weak boundaries are a sign that we want to be respected, and yet they make us less respectable. Unless you happen to be Bilbo and then find the one true ring and slay a dragon. But, you know, details. Anyway, if we have difficulty saying no and over-prioritizing other people's needs at our own expense, this causes us problems. If we find ourselves doing all the household tasks or always being available on our partner's or our friend's terms, whilst we end up neglecting our own priorities, we probably have some weak boundaries. If all our boundaries are floppy or porous, this can lead to us being withdrawn in relationships as we give in to the continual needs of other people. And as I've mentioned, in extreme cases, this can actually lead into a cycle of abuse. We might even find that we frustrate others with our lack of spine and they try to provoke us into standing up for ourselves, whilst at the same time becoming accustomed to having whatever they want from us, and this is really bad and unacceptable. Now, the other type of unhelpful boundary that we might have is a rigid boundary. Instead of a gate allowing other people's needs in and out, what we have is just a very solid wall. If a boundary could be a movie scene, a rigid boundary would be Gandalf in the Mines of Moria battling the Balrog on the Bridge of Khazad Dûm, where he makes his stand and boldly states, "You shall not pass." Not only does he state his boundary, he also shatters the Bridge of Khazad Dûm, which he is standing on at the time, and falls into the abyss below with the Balrog. Perhaps just to prove a point, who knows? A rigid boundary means absolutely nothing will be getting past, and you're quite happy to jump off a cliff whilst fighting a flaming demon 300 times your size, rather than investigate any other possibility, like maybe making some sensible allowances of how to meet each other's needs. Rigid boundaries do certainly have a time and a place, like standing up for equality or against sexual abuse or Balrogs. But most rigid boundaries are often an overreaction, perhaps due to past experiences where a vulnerability was exploited. They can lead you to be isolated as you cut people out of your life, perhaps just due to a minor offense. And it's not just anger responses to boundaries being broken. We might simply avoid conflict completely and run away from our problems. So these examples were like the most extreme versions of weak or rigid boundaries, but these exist on a spectrum, and we can have sort of floppy, porous boundaries or a bit too rigid boundaries that ultimately still get in the way of our life. For most of us, we suffer from too many weak boundaries, and it's due to our desire to please others. The biggest reason here is that we have the unspoken belief that boundaries are mean or harsh or selfish. We associate saying yes and being giving with the word kindness. And we think of the word no and using firmness as unkindness. We also find that we can fear conflict from being too harsh and that it'll look bad on us. The thing we really need to do is understand that we can be both loving and firm at the same time without being harsh. We need to find some understanding within ourselves that we can be kind whilst also not being agreeable. Long-time listeners will know that I do get excited by a quadrant. The Arbinger Institute has an especially good quadrant, even for the non-quadrant lovers amongst you. On one axis of our quadrant of responses, we have being soft or being hard. On the other axis, we have being loving or resistant. And that gives us four different combinations of responses around a need or request and how our boundaries respond to it. We can be soft and loving, hard and loving, or we could be soft and resistant, or hard and resistant. So if you're going to be soft and loving, that would mean complying with a request because it aligns with your values and you just genuinely want to help. Perhaps that means assisting your partner with a work project because you just like being supportive. You happily allow the request with no specific expectation of getting something in return. A hard and loving action would be enforcing a necessary but like unpopular rule to protect someone's safety or well-being. Perhaps you have to fire an employee because if you don't, the company will run out of money and then everyone will lose their jobs. It's still actually a nice thing to do if it's needed. With a partner, this might mean asking for some space because you aren't able to give them your full attention right now. Perhaps you have too much work on or you're really tired, but you do want to help them out and you're able to reassure them that you will put time aside to solve an argument or issue together. When we come to a soft but resistant response, that would mean agreeing to something to avoid confrontation, even though it actually goes against your better judgment or your personal needs or your values. You might need to do your own work, but you end up making dinner because your partner complains that you aren't being supportive. Or you agree to go visit friends even though you don't even like going out anymore and you're feeling ill, and you end up having a terrible day the next day because of you shouldn't have gone out with them, even though you didn't want to. A hard and resistant action would be acting out of anger or spite, where the primary goal in the action is to hurt or assert dominance over someone rather than to constructively address an issue. With your partner, this might mean you threaten to leave them because of an argument isn't going your way. Or perhaps they point out that you aren't very good at parking the car, and so you insult their basic intelligence. Looking at this quadrant and the four different responses, we see that actually we can be loving whilst having healthy boundaries. If we can understand our needs and keep them appropriately prioritized in the context of our partner's needs and communicate those with empathy, it allows us to get what we want in the end. And that's actually very loving. And furthermore, if we have weak boundaries and do things where we still have internal resistance, this can be unloving to ourselves, which can add up to loss of love in the relationship. And that can directly lead to too much resistance inside us, which causes us to then lash out with a hard and resistant response. And so I think it's really important here to notice that boundaries are not selfish, boundaries are not mean, and boundaries are certainly not about controlling others. And this leads us into then setting healthier boundaries. To start creating and maintaining healthy boundaries, you're going to have to work out what boundaries you want to set. These could be personal physical boundaries, or they could be social boundaries, or they could be value-based boundaries. In all cases, it's worth putting in some thinking time in the shower or sitting on the toilet, or of course, actually writing out what you want to do with your life and your boundaries. Personal boundaries are how you would like people to treat your physical body. This might sound obvious, but writing down the things that make you feel uncomfortable will make it easier to then identify when and where it happens and what are the changes you'd like to see. Maybe you don't like people hugging you if you don't know them, and what you'd like is to be able to handshake or have a wave. It sounds obvious, but if you don't write it out, it's hard to make it happen or think about how you'd communicate it. Then you have social boundaries, which are about setting expectations for behaviors in relationships. Standards of how others should speak to you, how they should speak about you, how you share time with others, and how they should treat your belongings. Some people might borrow your book, leave it at the bottom of their bag, along with their sweaty gym clothes. They'll fold the pages, they'll get food on it, and it's not cool. This is also for my friends listening, by the way. Ruining my books is definitely a boundary for me. And I didn't think I would need to communicate it, but then some people just don't have respect for books and they didn't necessarily think they were doing a bad thing. Other boundaries might be people make jokes at your expense or command you around in ways that make you feel uncomfortable. And you have every right to work out how you want to change those behaviors and then communicate it. You might want to set boundaries around how much time you spend with people or how long a visitor is allowed to stay in your house. Boundaries are, of course, flexible, and sometimes a friend could stay a few days longer than the rule of only 2 days or something. And certainly I don't mind an old book getting abused and just consider it giving a book away instead of lending it. But writing out what you think you want to happen is key to then start asserting it. Finally, we have value-based boundaries. But firstly, a quick advert break. Finally, we have value-based boundaries, and this is another approach that's less focused on a specific behavior, and it's more about creating an ongoing effort to honor your values. Part of that means not just understanding your values, but communicating them, and regularly, like your diet preferences, what behaviors make you upset. And rather than a specific boundary, it means being open to work towards a solution that fits in with your values. Like I said at the start, I wouldn't exactly tell my girlfriend to go away after 11 p.m, but I can explain that I really value sleep a lot, and I can trust her to respect that and know that she's not going to disturb me and keep me awake on a weeknight unless it's something important. And this makes value-based boundaries easier to be flexible with and still have a good idea of when the line is being crossed. When you're looking at writing out what boundaries you want to set and investigating this area, you might want to reconsider the 10 signs that you have boundaries difficulties from earlier in the podcast, and I'll leave them in the show notes. This can really help you investigate each of the different behaviors that you have, and what are the kind of things that triggers them, and what are the kind of actions that trigger them, and you can use that to dig into the boundaries and values that you want to start working towards. And then you can start moving on to communicating your boundaries once you've defined them. The first rule here is that if a situation arises, you should communicate your boundaries immediately. Time can pass and resentment can build and fester if we don't do this. Sometimes it can be hard to do it right away, and especially if we're feeling ruffled, but we should really make a point to communicate our boundaries at the first available moment, or even over text if you find it more comfortable do it that way. What's critical here is that we are assertive in our communication. If we come across apologetic, that implies that we have wiggle room. If we try to explain ourselves, that can also lead to us being argued with or being told that our reason isn't valid. Let's say, for example, your brother borrows your car and he's supposed to give it back 2 hours later, but he keeps it until the next morning. Following this advice, you should try and say something like, "When you borrow my car, I need you to return it on time, otherwise I won't be able to lend it to you." And it feels kind of awkward and unnatural because we generally like to explain ourselves and give reasons for things. And it would feel more natural to say something like, "I need my car to get to work, I need to pick up the kids, I need to run errands, etc." But although this provides more clarity and reasoning, it also provides a bunch of things that can be argued with, like he could tell you that you could walk or use public transport because all of these things are in the city and he needs to drive to the mountains. So if it's something that you're feeling uncomfortable about, you do need to set a hard boundary. And once you do that, it's important to give yourself perhaps time afterwards to let your emotions settle and give yourself some rest afterwards. And when you're new to setting boundaries, this is especially important. We might find that we need to reinforce our boundaries as well. And there are three levels of boundary violation and the sort of appropriate responses that we can start practicing. There's a nice traffic light framework here of green, yellow, and red. Green is a gentle reminder of your boundary as a polite request or stating your values. Maybe the other person doesn't even know it's a boundary for you. So asking your flatmate to knock before entering, maybe getting relatives to call you before they visit, or letting people know that if they borrow your book, you'd like to have it back in the same condition. Then there's a yellow type of communication. If a boundary gets crossed after the green level of communication, we should deliver a more firm reminder. With the relative that you asked to call before visiting you, if they just turn up again, you could remind them of your request to always be called and perhaps offer to schedule a future visit that respects your, that of course respects your boundary around this and makes very clear that this is how you want things to be operating. You might even go as far as stating the consequences, like if someone defiles my book, it's just very not appreciated and I might unfriend that person on Facebook and tell everyone that they've ever fancied how tiny their penis is. And some people might say that I'm being unreasonable here, but sometimes we can be our own judge of our own appropriate levels of response. Finally, we have the red level of boundary communication, and this is the most stringent when previous attempts to communicate and uphold our boundary have failed. This means taking decisive action to protect oneself. So if the relative shows up unannounced, perhaps you simply don't open the door to them, or maybe I just make people pay for a new book for ruining mine, or never talk to them again. And going through this three-step framework, it does sound so obvious, but it's funny because it's not that intuitive to just do. Like, if I honestly look back at my story I said about my 18-year-old self in the Caribbean, I did a terrible job of this. I didn't really communicate my boundaries. I kind of thought they were known, and I uncomfortably let them be broken again and again until they got so bad that I didn't really know what to do. And I went straight to the red level of boundary issues and just ran away because I kind of had no choice at that point and was being completely taken advantage of. And curiously, he didn't even ruin any of my books, so he probably can't have been that bad. Anyway, this makes an important point that we do really need to communicate our boundaries early and often, especially with loved ones, because we know we don't want to upset them and it can be hard to have these conversations at a later date when things have started to spiral. People ultimately can't read minds. And yes, most people aren't going to deliberately take advantage of you, but people will still do things that seem okay if you don't state what your needs are. And I'm certainly not trying to say that any of this is easy. And I also wouldn't advise you to try and radically change your life in one big boundary upheaval moment. To improve at boundaries, I would start small and get used to setting boundaries and communicating them, and practice incorporating boundaries into your life. Just small things like saying you have work and not taking time to help people with other things or doing the dinner, etc. And build up gradually. Once you get better at it, you can find that it will make your life a lot easier as you get used to simply saying no and prioritizing your own plans and needs. As we grow up in life, we find that the ability to say no to stuff is one of the most important behaviors that we can use to protect our time and attention and to create the life that we want to live on our own terms. And the other great thing about boundary setting, I think, is that as you start to do it and you spend time working out what your boundaries are, you can also see the things that you're responsible for in yourself and start setting boundaries with yourself around, like my first example of using airplane mode on your phone and actually not letting yourself succumb to the other needs that are fighting against you and being more self-disciplined with yourself, because boundaries are an act of self-discipline in the end. Another interesting thing about boundaries, I think, is that we do all have our own preferences, but they can actually take a while to learn. I spoke about the importance of independence in the loneliness paradox episode, and I think I really need to stress it again here, because if we can become comfortable in our own space, I think we also get the time to learn our own values and be who we want to be. Setting boundaries is really about taking control of who we are and what we do, rather than letting others decide either of those things for us. If we bounce from relationship to relationship and without having any time in our own space, I don't think we really have the time to actually date ourselves and get to know who we are and what we stand for and what we like. Without independence, we can drift through life being what others want us to be and experience detachment from the situations we find ourselves in, because we had no autonomy in crafting that situation ourselves, whether that's the food we're given, the hobbies that we do, the holidays that we go on, the TV that we watch, the things we're even interested in. We don't necessarily know what we would do if it was all up to us, if it's never been just us. Yet once we take that time to be independent and work those things out, we can actually start to get much better at being interdependent and balancing our needs with others and setting boundaries that allow us to be ourselves whilst being able to fulfill the needs of others at the same time. And that's about all I really have time to say on boundaries here, but it's such a big thing and I wish I could give you a more definitive solution to boundaries. But as I outlined, they are super messy. It's something that just takes a lot of time and a lot of practice to build confidence and skill in, and it takes a lot of self-reflection and growth, as well as emotional intelligence to recognizing our emotions and those of others. The whole area of learning to communicate with empathy is a really massive topic that I can hardly summarize now at the end of the podcast in a few paragraphs. All I can say is that if you find this topic interesting, I can recommend the book Set Boundaries, Find Peace by Nedra Glover Taweb. And she also has a really great newsletter, by the way. And then for communicating better, I would advise you check out the book called Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg, which is a really good way of talking to people in a way that really prioritizes getting your needs out there between the both of you and understanding what the hell's going on without anyone getting offended. And that is all the time I've got for you today. And if you learned anything, please share it with a friend or give me a good rating, as that is how the show grows and helps me keep running the show. If you have any thoughts or questions, feel free to hit me up in the comments on YouTube or Spotify. Thanks to everyone who voted on our recent poll for episode topics for the rest of the season. How to Choose a Partner was the most desired episode, which is totally going to be a really good episode. So good choice there to anyone who voted. And also thanks to everyone who did comment or email me this week. It's really nice to hear from all of you. And it was especially great to get an email from Kevin Hudson in the Cayman Islands of all places back in the Caribbean. Nicely appropriate for the episode. And on that, I hope you can all remember that life is to be enjoyed and to not put off living your life until you hit some arbitrary achievements. The hedonic treadmill will suck you in. You need to get busy living, doing the things you want to do now, and don't let anybody get in the way of you doing you. That means using your amazingly healthy boundaries to assertively create the life you want to live. And as always, be kind to yourself, and whilst you're at it, be kind to someone else too.